Welcome to Brands Decoded podcast, where we speak with some of the best founders crafting the next generation of brands. I'm Rahul from Times Internet, where we back consumer internet companies.
Hi, I'm Zoeb from Sauce VC that backs early stage consumer brands. We came together to build the Brands Decoded community where members eat, drink, sleep, and craft brands. Our guest today is Shashank Mehta, a man who searched far and wide to understand what it means to be healthy. He started a blog called FitShit to share his learnings from that journey. Today, he continues this mission as founder of The Whole Truth. Pleasure to have you with us today, Shashank.
Awesome. Lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
So yeah, to start off, let's talk a bit about your background, Shashank. I believe you've worked in the FMCG sector. Can you elaborate a bit on how the experiences in that sector help you craft The Whole Truth?
Sure. So actually, The Whole Truth is kind of the culmination of both my professional and personal journey. So I'll touch upon both. Professionally, fairly boring, standard journey up to a point, engineer, MBA right after that, right out of campus, joined Unilever. That's 2009. And then did Unilever for 3 years. In 2012, left Unilever. That's where it started becoming interesting. I left Unilever when I was doing really well and joined Fasos at that time, which is now Rebel Foods, as their first EIR. Jaideep had just raised a round from Sequoia and he was hiring EIRs. Did that for 2 years. Came back to Unilever in 2014. Did Unilever again for 5 years, this time in more of a brand role capacity. The first stint was more sales. And then left Unilever again in 2019. So I have the dubious distinction of quitting Unilever twice. I think the HR has a photograph of me that we'll never let this happen. So that's the professional journey. So obviously, through the Unilever journey, I've seen how marketing operates from the back end, right? So, and I was largely in personal care during my professional life. So I've sold you skin creams and hair care and stuff like that. But at the same time, there was a personal journey going on. So when I was 19 years old, just entered college, I was 110 kgs. And then some shit happened, most probably. My memory eludes me, but most probably it was a girl's rejection. And I decided that I'm going to lose weight because that's the reason I'm getting rejected. And within a year, less than a year, I lost some 40 kgs. I just started running and stopped eating. I went batshit crazy. There was no science to it. I didn't educate myself. So I did that, became really happy that now I'm a thin guy. I used to think thin is equal to fit. So I'm not a fit guy. Started eating like the thin folks around me, and lo and behold, within 2 years, all of the weight came back, right? Then I lost it again. Then I again was stupid enough to think it's gone. Then it came back again. Then I lost it again. So I've done this plus minus 25, 30 kg cycle thrice in life before it got into my thick skull that most probably it's not just me that's being stupid. It's most probably there's something outside which is keeping me from keeping the weight off. That's when I started getting into food and researching what goes into food. Started writing a blog called FitShit, which was a side hustle during the Unilever days. Used to do it over the weekends, and that really took off. And that pretty much was the genesis, I would say, of The Whole Truth. By the way, the parent company is called FitShit Health Solutions. It's an ode to where it all started. So I think there came a point where I realized that I have a unique insight into what's wrong with food, and I have the professional chops to do something about it. So I shouldn't be a bystander and just comment by the sidelines. Better throw my hat in the ring and see whether I've really got to make things change, got it to, you know, change things. And yeah, that's how the company started.
Amazing journey, Shashank. Wow. I myself used to be 113 kgs and now in my 80s. So I totally relate to your personal journey, as I also realize the importance of food in one's health. I'm sure the blog helped you gain a lot of insights on what problems people face and what they are eating. Wanted to understand how you use those insights from the blog to carve out the products at The Whole Truth.
So I think, unfortunately, the word insight is very aggrandized and abused in the world. Usually when you dive deep into something, you start feeling things about that space which others don't feel. It I think starts at a more internal level. And when I started Fitshit, the simple hypothesis was no one seems to be telling the truth. And the thing with the truth is, who is to say there's no absolute truth, right? Who's to say what's your truth versus my truth? I realized that the definition of truth is I will tell people my truth. And that started resonating massively. So that was the biggest insight, that people are starved of the unmotivated, unbiased truth, right, about their food. Because people are reading 1500 word articles, like that's the minimum length of an article on Fitshit. In a day and age when I was told that, you know, Instagram is taking off, thumb stopping creatives, and people don't even look at photographs anymore for 2 seconds, people are coming and reading 1500 word articles, right? So that for me was the biggest insight, and didn't happen as an aha moment. It happened over time, right? And then about the bars specifically, right bang in the middle of the Fitshit journey, right at the end of the first year, I did an article which was the best and worst protein bars in India. By that time, by the way, I did not have any inkling that I was ever going to start up. I did this article, it really took off. Even today, if you search on Google, it ranks on SEO without me having spent a penny behind it. Right, so that told me that A, this is a category which is being consumed by the most health conscious people in the country, right? And hence, by definition, they are the most involved people when it comes to their health. This is why this article is taking off. That was insight number one. Second, I realized that it really doesn't take much of equipment or machinery, etc., to make a protein bar. All it takes is an oven and a mixie, both of which I have in my home. I was like, chalo, let's try making one. And why try making one? Because this thought, this germ of the idea that why isn't there a brand that just talks about its ingredients up front? Like, food should be about ingredients. Why is food about sexy, chocolatey photo shoots and hot women licking some bar off a plane? I don't get it. Like, why isn't food about ingredients? Why are there almonds flying and, you know, ratings flying all over the pack when actually in your food you're putting 2% almonds and then you're putting a star mark saying images are for representative purposes only? You're not selling a fucking car where, you know, the all the accessories you show are in a higher model, but you're putting price of a lower model. That's where this images are for representative purposes only thing started, and it made its way into our food. Why? Yeah, so this thought was always there, that can there be a brand which just says, hey, this is the food, this is the ingredients that have gone into my food and there's nothing else? Yeah. And the doubt was, maybe it's not been done because it can't be done, because shelf life won't happen, because, you know, nothing would bind it together. Most of the sugary liquid that we put in food is to bind food together so it doesn't break in transit, etc., right? With protein bars, it seemed like a very low entry barrier space to try, because it didn't require any machinery. Yeah, so I said, let's try and see whether it happens or not. It took me about 7-8 months. I'm no chef, right? So it took me a lot of trial and error, etc. And the only rule that I started with was, nothing in this, I can't put anything in this which I can't proudly declare on the front of pack. That's the simple rule. Which again made it easy, because, hey, I don't have access to a chemistry lab from which I can get ingredients. I have access only to my kitchen. So whatever was there in my kitchen, I started putting in a mixie. And then it was massive trial and error. I have logs and logs in my notebook where I'm like, this recipe is plus one date. This recipe is minus two almonds. This recipe is plus two cashews, right? So because there's no other way to do it, like at least I don't know any other way to do it. And in 7-8 months, my HUL colleagues, Unilever colleagues, used to be my guinea pigs. Every other day, they'd know that Shashank will bring some crumbly new bar. And 6-7 months in, it started getting pretty decent. And my conviction in the fact that this can be done, it's not been done because it's not been attempted with this lens, started getting formed. And and then a lot of other serendipitous stuff happened around my bosses. They were the first ones I told ki main aisa soch raha hun. And they said, chhod mat, but agar chhodega to we'll put money. So it was a very clear indicator ki ye to kar lena chahiye. So that's how it started.
Amazing.
Thanks for sharing that amazing story, Shashank. And that actually reminds me of a typical concept that we see in startups, that is the MVP, the minimum viable product. You know, so the way it goes is that suppose you're solving for transportation, before you make a car, you make a skateboard. That's the MVP. So if you transfer this concept to a brand, I wanted to ask you, how do you make a MVP for a brand, or perhaps a MVB?
I don't think you can do an MVP on a brand. What, and that's not even the right approach. So let's scale back to what is a brand and why is it needed in the first place, right? Let's go back to first principles on brands. So about, let's say, 200-300 years ago, there weren't many brands, right? Like you would go to the local, if you were in England, you'll go to the local butcher, local bakery, get the bread from there, get stuff from there. In India, you'll go to the local chakki and get your atta and your dalein, etc. Right? Then as industrialization happened, people started moving to cities and away from their sources of food. We don't even know where our food comes from now, right? Because someone sitting in the outskirts is making the food. And they started going to a retail store to buy. They were like, hey, I wish I could identify Jack's bread because I used to love Jack's bread. And they told Jack, hey, why don't you put a logo on your bread so that I can identify it? And I then trust that this bread is great because it comes from Jack. Right? That's how brands started. Right? And hence brands, the evolution, the primary reason for brands to exist is trust. And initially they were just a logo and colors, etc. And then it started evolving to a point where now I think brands stand for trust plus a fundamental human insight. Yeah. So for example, on Surf, one of the largest brands in the world, the insight is dirt is good. Yeah. So if you see any of their ads when the kids are playing in Keechard and then, you know, the kid says, main use maar dunga jaake, the whole point is don't stop your kids from playing. If they get dirty, that means they are learning. Hence, dirt is good. Yeah. Similarly, Axe is all about attraction. Nike is about inspiration. Innocent is about innocence. All of these are fundamental human truths, yeah, which apply at large scale to mostly all people. Dove is real beauty. So they only take real women in their ads, etc. Right? So I don't think you can do a brand MVP. What you need to do is put down your human insight that your brand will be built on. And for us, that was the truth. The insight was no one likes being lied to. That's the one line that I wrote on a piece of paper when I took it to my bosses, that the human insight is no one likes being lied to. And this insight cuts across male, female, rich, poor, old, young, right? You might be the richest guy in the world eating in a 5-star hotel, but if in your bill I incorrectly charge you on one item, you will lose your shit. It's not about the money. You're feeling cheated and no one likes feeling cheated, right? So once I had that insight and I knew that I can make a product that lives up to that insight, that's the making of a great brand. Yeah. So I couldn't test it out anymore. I couldn't go and ask people, do you want brands to be truthful? What do you think they say? Right. And yet we go and buy the shit that we buy because no one's given us an option. Right. So that's my answer. I don't think you can do an MVP on a brand.
Makes a lot of sense. It's interesting that you mentioned earlier that you never wanted to do a startup. Was it because of your Faso's experience? And how did you actually end up doing it? And who were your partners in crime?
So, yes, it was the Faso's experience because, first of all, I realized that restaurant operations is a special kind of hellhole. And I am just not built for it. Like, and it took me 2-3 years to accept that I am not built to do this, right? Because restaurant operations is 24/7, right? You cannot switch off. What are the world's holidays are your busiest days. When the when you want to relax with your friends, where do you go? You go to a restaurant. So there's someone standing behind the counter making sure that stuff is getting served, right? So there is absolutely zero time to move out, think, redirect, etc. And I operate better when I get time to zoom out, think strategically where we are heading, and then do stuff, right? And the second thing I realized was the amount of effort and you know, heart and soul this is taking. The only way I can justify it is if I'm in the driver's seat. Because then if there is a disagreement between me and the founder or where on where this needs to lead, of course the founder should win. Like, that, it is his baby. It should win. But then I didn't find it in myself to have that level of heart and soul commitment when I didn't feel in the driver's seat. Yeah. So that's why I left. And that's why I said that this is just too much of an emotional tug and emotional drain to do ever again. Yeah. Until I came to a point where, you know, call it serendipity or whatever it was. I don't know why I started writing FitShit and what happened, etc. But and by the way, on the professional front also, the last 3 years of Unilever, I was busy crafting and launching Unilever's first new brand that they had ever made in the last 50 years, which is Lever Ayush. Otherwise, Unilever only launch HUL, mostly launches brands which exist in the West and they bring them to India, right? So I had that experience of crafting a brand and launching it. I had FitShit going, my own personal experience. Suddenly, it started making sense again that, you know, this seems to be ordained, that this must be done. And it still took me a long while to get over the bias of, you know, the last experience that am I ready for how much this will take out of me? But yeah, what helped me cross the line was there were just too many things which were falling in place. And on partners in crime, frankly, the first most important person who decided to come on board is Rachna, who heads production for us now. She's a friend's friend. So when I told you after 6-7 months, the product was looking decent, but I'd come at a place where I was now stuck. I wasn't making any more progress on it. So I asked a friend who connected me to her, saying she's a chef, she can help you. She's a bakery chef. And she, I don't know why, goodness of her heart, the brilliant person she is, she started helping me post work at 10 in the night. We would be in her kitchen trying new batches, trying to move the product towards better stability, towards better binding, etc. And in that process, she also got sold on to the mission that, you know, for the last 15 years, she'd been selling sugary cake to the world. And she was like, I see this as my redemption, that I need to do this with this right. And she decided to also join in. And that also gave me huge confidence that, you know, protein bar is okay, but what about future products? And Rachna being there was a huge fillip again in the decision. And again, it was like, oh, fuck, everything seems to be falling in place. What's my excuse now?
Thank you for sharing that story and for all of your candid answers. I wanted to ask you how much of your own worldview and personality actually went into this brand. And I mean, how much of a connection is there between you and the brand?
100%, man. There is what you're seeing is like my voice and the brand's voice are the same. I write the copy. I do most of the content in terms of what goes on the back, etc. The copy, etc. is written by me. And I frankly don't know how it can be any other way. Because that's the only way to keep it honest in the long term. Right? You can't, if I'm faking it, at some point of time, it's going to break. At some scaling point, it's going to break. Because how will I scale fakery? Like, that's going to happen, right? So, and the death knell for brands is the brand. I see brands as characters. And imagine, you know, some Vasipur character suddenly speaking glib English. You'd be like, what the fuck just happened, right? Like, I don't think this guy is out of character. And hence, you will lose trust, right? Because the minute someone goes out of character, you're like, something is up. I don't know what's up. right? So if the longevity of a brand is dependent on continuity of character, then the only way to stay in character is to have an honest character behind who cannot change because this is who he is. Yeah, so it is 100% of me. There is no doubt about it.
Makes a lot of sense. And like you mentioned, you've been making the bars using all natural products. So has that reduced the shelf life of the products? And did a shorter shelf life build trust amongst the consumers? Eager to hear your thoughts.
So see, to be honest, very few people get that it's smaller, you know, lower shelf life because it's super fresh and clean. And honestly, before I even, D2C is great because I can talk to consumers directly, but the minute there's a middleman, Amazon and retailers don't care, right? They're like, if you don't even have 3 months of shelf life, then so there'll be tons of returns, etc., all of that stuff. So it is tough. It is a price we pay for being true to our brand truth, and that's fine. The business way of looking at it is, I think of it as a cost. What's the cost? There'll be more returns. Let's say there'll be 5% returns, right? Is the value of staying true to your core belief high enough that you can charge actually a 10% premium on your brand? If you can, then this is fine, right? Because effectively the consumer is saying, you are being so truthful, I will give you 10 bucks extra. And okay, $5 will come back in returns. That's fine. So that's how I look at it from a business lens, right? When we make products, we try and like within the bounds of keeping it 100% honest and natural. Of course, we try and push up shelf life as much as possible through like the biggest. Okay, so how do microorganisms grow in food, which spoil the food eventually, right? They need two things. They need energy and water. Any organism needs energy and water, right? Cut out one of these and the growth goes down dramatically, right? So we try and make products without adding even a drop of water. So for example, the bars don't have even a drop of water, and that takes a lot of work because water, again, with sugar in it, is a great binder. Put honey into anything and it'll, you know, coagulate and make everything stick together, etc. And second, choose the ingredients inherently need to have very high shelf life. So for example, almonds, cashews, dates, you can leave them out in the open for a year, right? And they don't go bad. So if the inherent shelf life of ingredients is high, the composite will have lower than that, but still fairly high shelf life. So we do a lot of research to make sure that, you know, eventually we need to be running a viable business. Otherwise, we'll go back to just being commentators on the sidelines, ki ye galat ho raha, ye galat ho raha, but you're not giving people a viable option. Because people are not going to change their shopping behavior from stores and Amazon to coming to your doorstep and buying something fresh, right? So you need to serve them where they are. So it's a fine balance, but that's how we approach it. Yeah.
Got it. I want to switch gears a bit and talk a bit about how you have built your team at The Whole Truth. You know, it would help us if you could explain why you went for the EIR structure, or for our listeners, EIR stands for Entrepreneur in Residence, something that, you, as you mentioned, was at Fasos, your previous organization. Why go for such a structure, you know, as opposed to Unilever?
I first of all, loved the way Jaideep was building his team. Even today, and it stood the test of time, right? There were a total of 9 or 10 EIRs that he hired earlier. And 6 of them today have been promoted to co-founders. The other 3 are running their own companies, etc. So, of course, he was great at hiring. But the structure worked. So there was already proof that it works. But more importantly, I think it's very clear to me that, you know, I have no misconceptions that we are building a Tesla or a SpaceX, right? And hence, we don't need PhD scientists. What I mean by that is, I don't think at the stage that we are in our journey, since we are not solving some unsolved yet problem by humanity, what we need is generalists with very, very high intent. Yeah, because the toughness with startups of our kind is not that you will be solving one big problem over 2 years. It's that you will be solving 40 small problems every day. And hence, the quantity of problems that starts making you feel that 24 hours is very less in life. And the only way you get over it is not through some preordained skill that you've gained over 20 years of experience. It's through intent. Yeah. A. B. As you grow, you want, at least I want, and that, by the way, comes from Unilever. It's the same philosophy that I want the leaders in the company to be ingrown. Which requires them to have shuffled across roles, have done supply chain for 2 years, sales for 2 years, branding for 2 years, so that when I give them a P&L, let's say 4 years down the line, we are in three countries. I want one EIR to be heading the P&L of each country, right? And only if he or she has experience across functions can they do that, right? So again, from every lens, be it the Faso's experience, the Unilever generalist experience versus, say, the P&G vertical structure, I've always been in love with the Unilever generalist. Keep swapping people every 2 years for different roles, keeps people's minds fresh, keeps them motivated. So right. Again, was a no-brainer to me that this is the route I'm going to go down.
Sweet. That's very, very interesting. For the listeners, could you very quickly, maybe in 30 seconds, help us understand how do you define an EIR? Like, you know, and maybe if you are looking for more, how should they reach out to you?
Definition of EIR, which is entrepreneur in residence, is exactly what the word says, that if you're someone who believes that actually in the future you'd actually want to be a entrepreneur, which is either running your own P&L or running your own company, which is absolutely fine by us, come here. We'll give you the platform to learn across functions, hopefully building one of India's best brands. And the definition is if doing a different role every 2 years and doing roles which you on paper aren't qualified to do excites you, then this is the place for you. If it scares you and you think, oh no, I'm a finance guy, I should be doing finance, then please choose a career path where you become a CFO. Yeah, this is not that. This leads you to be a P&L owner and always looking for amazing people to hire. So Shashank@thewholetruthfoods.com is the email ID. I can pretend to have some chief of staff or manager and the group.
Great. So Shashank, you know, some brands call themselves real or preservative free while having loads of sugars and additives. Haven't these brands tarnished the whole concept and made customers feel cheated? How did you manage in a situation to win the trust of customers?
Actually, I think it's, they've done us a great favor. Like in VC terms, they left the truth flank open, right? Brands have been lying for so long that consumers approach with distrust, right? And consumers aren't stupid. They figure it out eventually. You might fool them once or twice, but eventually they figure it out. Problem is, if I don't have an alternative, what am I going to do, right? But I think once with us, I'm sure they must have approached with distrust. Here's another brand which is saying that it says the truth. But when they got the product in their hand, when they saw, oh, five ingredients up front, let me turn the pack. Oh, still five ingredients at the back. Let me bite into it. Oh, I can taste each and every of the five ingredients that they're talking about. Yeah. I think imagine them going from minus 10 to plus 10 in one interaction and what huge trust that would build in a sea of distrust, right? So I just think the product needs to live up to it, and you actually have a great advantage when people approach with distrust, because it's even getting them to zero is a massive win.
You know, this actually reminds me of, you know, the first time I tried the protein bar. I remember this is early in my days at Sauce, and it was just any other normal day. And I remember there was a knock at the cabin, and it was your wife, Aditi, who, she had, a couple of these samples for us to try out. And, at the time I had absolutely zero expectations. The first few companies that I was spoke to were protein bars, and I was just a bit concerned that as a consumer VC, am I just going to be eating protein bars and trying this stuff? To add to that, it came in this brown package, and I just had a bad experience and with other protein bars, and I just had this perception that healthy food is just going to taste bad. But I remember very distinctly when Manu and I first opened the bar and tried it, we had a first bite and then we looked at each other going like, whoa, damn, it tastes really good. And for me, with the product, it just became that not only was it healthy, it was also super tasty.
I remember at that time when I was, this was in my notice period in Unilever, and I was meeting Manu, and he used to tell me, yaar, I'm getting pitched by a bar guy every 3 days. There are too many.
For sure.
In the world. Yeah, well, I think we underestimate our biology. What I mean by that is, we keep hearing this that our food has evolved in the last 200 years, but our bodies haven't, and our tongue hasn't, and our stomach hasn't, which is absolutely true. And how that plays out is when real food touches your tongue and goes into your tummy,
Yeah.
It just doesn't take too much beyond that to, you don't have to theorize, you don't have to think about it, you just know.
So you mentioned that eventually you will get into other products. What are these products going to be? How do you find that there's a gap for a particular product?
So I'm not going to give you category names.
I'm going to say that this is top secret, so you can't share.
That's okay.
The whole truth policy applies.
But once it's launched, the whole...
But I can give you the framework with which we approach it. And it's calling it a framework is a fancy term. It's very simple here. It's one of those Venn diagrams of your three circles. If there is a category where consumers are being lied to today, that's one circle. Can we create a product that lives up to the whole truth promise? That's two. And three is it tasty? If these three circles intersect in any food category, we will enter.
So if I'm correct, in the future, you want to release products that'll be catering to mass audience. Is that so?
Yeah, inherently, it'll be hard to find a smaller category than protein bars in India. So by definition, future categories will be larger, and larger category means they reach more people. So you're right, yeah.
So Shashank, can you tell me what was the reaction of your family when you told them you wanted to leave your job and make protein bars? Because you literally had a stellar career at Unilever, and a lot more things were promised. So how did they take it?
I think they were... So this has history to it, right? They were shell-shocked when I told them that I'm leaving Unilever to join Fasos, right? And I come from a very, very typical middle-class family. No one in 2 degrees of separation has ever run a business. And when I quit Unilever for the first time, I was performing the chops. I was on a fast track and all of the jazz, right? So so that time they were really, really shocked, and they were like, you've gone stupid, what are you doing, all of that stuff. Took a lot of convincing, but eventually they were like, I think I've realized that parents, they might not agree, but they give in. They realize, kya kar sakte hain, usko karna hai to karna hai, right? And then for the 2 years, they saw first year was good, second year was a struggle. Then I came back. Then they got the satisfaction ki humne pehle hi bola tha tereko types. That happened. I think it was a story of two reasons. One is between 2012 and 2019, there's been a sea shift in understanding and acceptance of startups, right?
Yeah.
The newspaper my parents read has front page stories of startups. Of them doing founders making big bucks, etc. So it didn't seem like he's out on some quixotic endeavor sort of a thing. And second, I think between then and now, I was married and my wife was backing me. I think they got comfort from that too. And of course, then I gave them the spiel that, you know, nahi chalega to 2-3 saal mein, I can always come back and get a job, right? So, how does it matter? Which, by the way, was one of the big things it took for me to also cross the barrier that, you know, I had these all sorts of rationalizations. I spent 6 months finding rationalization arguments of if it all goes down the drain, what's the backup? And, you know, I would calculate that so many of my peers in Unilever actually had 2 to 3 years of work experience before MBA. So I'm already 3 years ahead of them. So if it goes down after 3 years, so what? I will still be, you know, in line age-wise with them. Then I had this thing of, so when I left this time, I was again at the cusp of getting a massive, like, work level promotion, which means salary goes up by 40% and job prospects go up by 100% and all of that stuff. So I was like, should I wait another 3-4 months, get this on my CV and then quit? So that if I have to come back, I come back at much higher salary. Yeah. So all of this I internally went through, but when I went to them, A, they saw the conviction, B, world had changed, C, my immediate partner was in line. I think all of that made it easier the second time.
And D, the bars were tasty because they had them too.
Yeah, that's that's true. But I don't think parents think first principles. Parents think first kids.
Yeah.
And they think kids are out to kill themselves.
Shashank, because some of our listeners will be people looking to start brands, some of them could be bakers. And like you said, Rachna, your partner, right, who's been a baker, what's your advice to hundreds of Rachnas out there? How do they find a niche? How do they start a brand?
First of all, I don't know if everyone wants to or needs to. Like, there is, I frankly debated for the longest time whether, you know, getting on the VC treadmill and trying to make a large company might set up the wrong incentives and some, and, you know, incentivize me to belie the truth of the brand and all of that stuff, right? So first of all, there should be absolutely no, like, whoever, to each his or her own. But if you do wish to make things large and, you know, grow a business beyond a certain home business, etc., I think for product businesses, you know, the first thing to crack is people will not be able to try your product first. First, your word will get to them, then your product will get to them. Yeah. So think about what's the word that you want to get to them. Yeah. Which comes back to insight. Like, why should your brand exist? What is the gap in the world that you will come and fill, right? If that answer isn't clear, then you might have the best cake or the best protein bar in the world. You know, I've built it, they will come, it will not happen. Yeah, so that's my biggest advice, that don't let yourself fall into the fallacy that now that I have a great product, which everyone seems to love, now, why wouldn't it become a 100 crore company tomorrow? It wouldn't, because your product won't reach people first. What you say about it and your brand will reach first. And what you say must be relevant and must be insightful for me to give it a year. Otherwise, I will ignore it in the clutter that exists in this world.
So, Shashank, have there been any surprises or instances that shocked you during this entrepreneurial journey? Why I ask is because, you know, I follow you on Twitter and I came across one of your tweets, which was quoting this blog read by diabetic patients, right? And a lot about how, what sort of nutrition diabetic patients could have. And they had an entire feature on the whole truth. So, you know, I could sense that there was something that you're very happy about and proud of. So are there any more surprises such as that you can share with us?
Many, many, many. So, there are so many pregnant women who tell us that their nutritionist has told them that this bar is great for them because their protein requirements are higher and their magnesium requirements are higher, both. And yet, you know, especially for women who are vegetarian, how do I go up from, like, I am not even able to get my 40 grams, 50 grams of protein. Now my dietitian is saying go up to 60, 70. How do I do it? Yeah. So they love our bars. Moms with young kids, they're like, I've now started putting a bar as a tiffin snack and the kid thinks it's a chocolate, so he loves it. I am happy that he's getting something nutritious and not having junk. Yeah. So people with elders at home really like our bars, you know, for their parents, because they are not at home most of the time. They're always out. And if the parents need a sweet snack, and in half the cases, one of the parents is going to be diabetic. Yeah. So, right. So tons of use cases that, that popped up that we never optimized for. And it again goes back to, I think, this first principle things, the more, you know, more said about it, the less. If you've just made real food, it will appeal to a broad range of human beings who need real right. food. Yeah. So we might call them use cases, etc. But it's just human beings liking real food.
So in a way, as you said that, no one likes to be lied across age groups, demographics. The same way, when the food is good, it's good for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Correct.
One last question to you, Shashank. What's your favorite brand except for The Whole Truth?
I have two favorites. In the food space, and especially because I'm a lover of copy, I think copy before I think design. I love Innocent. If you've seen what they do and have been doing for like years and years and years, I'm just in love. Like, they make me laugh with every piece of communication they put out, and it's so on brand and the products are great. I love Innocent. And the other one is Nike. And of course, Nike and Apple are oft-quoted examples. So guilty as charged. Love them both too. Nike specifically because how to shift the conversation away from just a shoe. And even today, I don't think apart from a handful of marketers, anyone will be able to tell you what is it that they do. And in one word for me, it's inspiration. Look at the videos that they make.
Yeah.
Like at the end of every video, I'm like, I'm going to go and rule the world. Like, fuck this. Why can't I do this? Right? And I'm like, what did they do to get me so charged? Right? And that's just, and to keep, as a marketer, I'm in awe of how they keep doing it repeatedly as a process again and again and again and again. Just in love with, like, they are at a next level.
Thank you, Shashank, for joining us today. It was such a pleasure to host you. We learned a lot, and I'm sure so did our listeners. To our listeners, if you like this episode, please do share it with others to learn more about consumer brands, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. We would absolutely love to hear your feedback and views. You can tweet it out to us on our handle, which is @KCAP_IN. See you next week with our next episode. Cheers.